Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
It's an old man's business. It's not a young person's business. You have to really do it for a long time and stay with it and stay in it. Welcome to 94 and More, presented by Bristol Studio. While a basketball court might be 94 feet, we believe it's limiting to solely look at this beautiful game as a sport. In our minds, it's closer to an art form, even a tool through which we can study the world and learn about ourselves. I'm your host, Jake Fenster, and on this podcast, we will explore the game of basketball, not only as a sport, but as a dynamic force that influences culture, builds bridges, and has the ability to shape our national conversation. Hope you enjoy. As always, feel free to reach out to us at 94@bristol-studio.com and follow us on Instagram at Bristol Studio and at 94 and More Podcast. All right, let's get into the show. Today, I'm joined by Cameron Fuller. Cam, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, Jake. It's, I wanted to come on the show for a very long time. So I feel honored now to be here.
Yeah, no, actually, last time I saw you was like a week ago. You came up to me and you kind of pressed me about it. And I actually had your name on the guest list for future like people I wanted to reach out to. And I couldn't find it in that moment. But then the next day I actually did find it. And I was going to send you a picture of it, but I figured I'd just reach out and schedule you anyway. So yeah, here we are.
You know, it all came full circle, although I still haven't seen my name on the list. So, you know, I'll just.
I'm going to find it for you. Okay. I'm going to find it for you. Can you tell everyone a little bit more about yourself?
More about myself. It's kind of a complicated question, I guess. When people ask me that, because it's so broad, yeah. and I feel like I've tried a lot of different things in my life, which some have been more successful than others. But I would define myself as an actor, a producer, a creative, but you know, it's all encompassed in the idea of business for me. So I guess it's the word entrepreneur, Jake.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. You said it. You said the word.
But yeah, you know, I've been acting since I was 18, which is now a while thinking about it. But I sort of got roped into it. You know me. I mean, in high school, we played sports. It wasn't really something I was thinking about, but I grew up in the entertainment business and I knew I wanted to be in it. I just didn't really know what that meant. And then went to college and got roped into acting and started booking things here.
So how did you get roped into acting? I think that's an interesting point, because a lot of people want to be actors or they want to figure out how to get into Hollywood or into acting.
Right.
And I'm curious how that happened for you.
So where it started was when you and I were both in high school together. Our high school somehow had a program where you could skip second semester senior year and go intern somewhere for 4 or 5 months. Do you remember this?
For us, it was senior projects, right? Where you just senior had project. To do some, you had to prove that you were doing something for 4 months and yeah, you could skip school.
Had to prove it. You had to do it.
But the guidelines were very loose. You could kind of get away with anything.
I feel like I knew a lot of people who just sat on their ass for 5 months straight and just didn't go to school, but you know.
Yeah. Some people went surfing for 4 months.
Yeah. So during that time I got an internship at William Morris, which is a talent agency, and I was 16 in a talent agency where everyone was, you know, the youngest people were out of college. And
what was the internship? Just kind of like a general
in the mailroom
intern. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. In the mailroom.
The dreaded mailroom.
Dreaded mailroom. For those who don't know what that is, it's basically, you know, you're in a basement in the agency and you're organizing mail and then you're pushing carts around and delivering mail to all the agents and the assistants pretty much all day. And there's a lot of mail that comes in. And then you also, you know, for all the clients there who are successful, they also get mail and fan mail, and there's just a lot of letters. I got a job there, and long story short, after pushing mail around for a while and getting used to that life, there was a manager there who stopped me. She had a meeting, and she said, "You need to be an actor." And I said, "What? No way." And she goes, "I think you need to be an actor. Here's my card. I want you to call me if you ever decide to be an actor." And I was like, "Yeah, okay, sure. Thanks." And I ended up somehow getting the itch. I called her and I tried it and it stuck with me. So
do you remember how that went? Like when you called her, did you know exactly what to say? Or were you like, you know, were you asking, all right, how do I go about this? Like, do I just, hi, like this is Cameron. I was the intern. I want to be an actor. Like what, how did you approach that?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I had run into her a few more times since she gave me the card. And then it became more and more of a conversation leading up to that call. But, you know, for me, it was like, it wasn't completely foreign to me because I grew up on a lot of sets and around a lot of actors, and I saw it and I sort of understood it from a first person perspective.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that far off from me. Yeah.
So that was the start of it. You made the call and then, you know, what was her reaction? How did you move forward from there when it went from just kind of like an idea to something that, you know, you were really going to do?
Yeah. So I made the call. And, you know, at that point with acting, I feel like for me personally, I never really knew what I was doing. Like I did everything that you're supposed to do. You go to class, you get a coach, you watch movies, you read. There's no set toolbook for acting, right? When you have a job that where you're employed at a company, it's like you work your way up, you build a skill set, and you can apply that to a specific sector in what you're specifically good at within the company. For acting, you just are working a muscle basically, and you're putting yourself out there every single week in hopes that you're chosen, essentially.
getting shot down, coming back, doing it again.
99% of the time you get rejected.
So,
you know, in the beginning, I basically sat down and she's like, all right, well, we're going to send you on auditions and do this and do that. And I remember my first audition, I was like, what am I?
Yeah.
I think I looked things up. I looked videos up on YouTube and I was calling friends and I was asking, like, you know, I remember when you go into an audition, you know, you're supposed to have your lines pretty much memorized, like,
yeah.
And then your sides, which are the pieces of paper with the dialogue that you're supposed to know on them. And I remember the first one I walked into, I brought in like the paper and I didn't even look up at the person reading. I'm like reading it as if it was a book. You know what I mean? It's funny because, you know, the longer you do it, the more seasoned you get at it, like anything. So,
So, do you remember when like it started to click for you a little bit and you started to get more seasoned and you started to go to those auditions and feel like, all right, now I'm not just, you know, out here winging it, but I'm really playing the game. I'm really going to, you know, get onto a show or into a movie. Like, did you start feeling that transition after a little while?
I mean, and you can ask a lot of people this and they'll probably give you different answers. I don't think you ever fully feel comfortable. Because it's tough. I mean, especially going through COVID and that kind of whole situation, it's like for me to go back into a room and perform for somebody, that feels odd. That feels super odd when I've been putting things on tape and just sending it in and working that way. So I feel like there's always that nerve. It just, you know, when you do something so many times, even though you have those nerves, you just get used to what you're doing.
Have you felt that doing the auditions by sending in the self tapes has been more comfortable, or is that something that you're now used to? Is that something that you think that you may be better at, or how does that compare to, you know, those in-person auditions?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that really like going into a room and performing. For me, I like self tapes because you send in your best takes. You don't have to send in you know, you don't go into a room and get one or two shots at it and then it's over and you're like, fuck, I prepared 3 days for this and I just went in, and sometimes you just don't land it. You know what I mean? Sometimes it just, things don't work out in your favor when you go into a room, but at least you give yourself a great chance to show what you can really do on a self-tape, and send in what you want to send in. So you have the choice, which I'm a big fan of.
Yeah. My follow-up to that would be, and I'm curious, because you have this experience. I don't really at all, but what would you say if someone said, well, the self-tape, you know, you're alone, you can isolate, you can record it how you want, send in your best version. And it's like a kind of a low stakes moment, right? Versus if you're in front of people, how you perform in front of people might be indicative of how you perform on a set, you know, in front of the director, in front of producers, with other actors. Do you think that that carries any weight at all? Or is it like, hey, just get the role and then the preparation will get you prepared for when you are on set?
It's funny. There's a auditioning for people and being on set, to me, feel like very different, you know.
How so? I'm curious.
When you're auditioning for people, you're fighting for the role. And when you're fighting for something really hard and you want something really bad, it's like any other career path. It's like when you want something so bad, the stakes are so high and you're so laser focused and you're nervous and you're feeling all these things. And then once you get a role, you know, to be on set and kind of feel like you're a part of something and you're meant to be there is a completely different feeling. And obviously it can get really nervous on set.
Yeah.
It's not easy by any means at all, but there's at least a comfort in, I booked this. I can breathe, right? Like I can take a breath and realize, okay, I did a great job. I am meant to be here. You know, now it's time to have some fun and do
what
and play around with it.
In a sense, you know, you're chosen to be there for that role. And I'm, you know, that's got to feel good, especially after all the times when you get turned down, when you do get picked to be on a set and you are on that set. I think there's a way to reflect and be like, no, like they picked me out of all the people that auditioned. I've been one of those people that's been on an audition and been turned down. And here I am in this moment. So maybe that does give you that energy, you know, to go out there and perform and work through whatever, you know, whatever comes up on the set.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole point of doing it is to get to that place. And then once you get to that place, that's your reward to the work that you've put in. So.
Yeah. Do you remember what it was like do you remember what the first role was that you landed? And do you remember what that was like, what you did afterwards, who you told, like just that whole experience?
So the first role that I landed, well, actually, the first thing I ever did was I was the baby in a movie called The Babysitter. So it doesn't really count.
We'll allow it. But
it's on my IMDb. So, you know,
we'll get the credit.
I have the credit. But the first role I landed, I was in college and it was my freshman year. And it was a director that I had known growing up, and he was a very sweet guy. And he asked me to audition for a small role in his movie. And I did. I think I stacked 3 cereal boxes and put a GoPro on top of it to audition at that point.
That's the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
The entrepreneurial spirit right there.
Yeah. And I ended up booking it, and I flew to Atlanta for a weekend, or for 4 or 5 days, I think. And I remember getting to set, and my scenes were with Hailee Steinfeld, who's a phenomenal actress. I got there and I was like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? I mean, I am terrified right now. And, you know, when you get to a set, they can either be really warm or it can be cold. You know, it can be a little bit colder. And that set happened to be so warm, and every single person embraced me. Right when I got there. So I felt so comfortable going into the scene, even though I really hadn't done it before, that, you know, whatever happened, I knew we would get what they wanted to get. And Hailee kind of got me through this scene. And, you know, by the end of it, I was hoping that I could stay and be in the rest of the movie, even though, you know, it was 1 day or 2 days of work. So
yeah,
it was, it was just a great, it was just a great experience, a great first experience.
What was the movie?
It was called Barely Lethal.
Okay. Okay.
It was with Samuel L. Jackson, Jessica Alba.
Quite the lineup.
Yeah, it was actually really, it was great. Dove Cameron, Sophie Turner, and Haley Steinfeld. Yeah, it was
good. That was the first role you landed.
That was the first role I landed.
So once you had your day on set and then it was done, you knew you completed the task and you started kind of getting back out there doing more auditions. Did you carry that with you? Did that give you something going forward that you kind of, you know, you said no one's ever comfortable. You know, you can ask all these different actors, you might get a different response, but did that give you a sense of comfortability at least that, all right, now I have that under my belt as I move forward into these rooms?
I think for a lot of people it would. For me, I would, you know, I always have felt like I was behind. A lot of people grow up and they're like, I want to act, I want to perform. And they've been performing since they were three or four years old.
Yeah. For me,
as you know, it wasn't like that. I was the opposite. I played sports my whole life. You know, yeah. I never really had interest in it. So I had always felt like I was playing catch up. So when that happened, it was a great feeling, but still it didn't make me feel, I wasn't comfortable by any means in what I did or what I was doing. I had no idea if what I did was good or horrible.
Yeah.
Kind of just waiting for someone to tell me if we can move on or if I'm going to come, you know, if I'm fired, pretty much. So no, I didn't feel much better about it. I think when there's more consistency in a job that you do, you start to feel a lot more comfortable in what you're doing. So my longest job in my career was a show called The Last Ship that I did. And I was on it for 4 seasons. That was different, right? Because when in the beginning, not comfortable at all. I mean, I booked one line on the show. So I was supposed to come in and say one line, and I did.
You killed that one line.
I came in, I had one line, and it was actually a really difficult line, and I struggled with it.
I'm sure.
I had to, like, turn around and say the line to Eric Dane, who's like, actor and a great, you know, great guy. He, like, mentored me through this scene, this, like, young dude who felt like he had no idea what he was doing.
Yeah.
And I was struggling with it, but the director was such a nice guy. And I bonded with this guy this day. Like, we just talked and I asked him questions and he was really nice to me. And 2 days later, I'm in Beverly Hills and I went to some store and the director happened to be in the store. And I went up to him and I gave him this big hug and I was like, that was the best experience of my whole life. Like, thank you for this. And he told me, he's like, you know what? Like, for you to just come and give me a hug, like, I'm having a really tough day today. And, you know, this is really kind of you. And I, you know, it means a lot to me. And I was like, oh, thank you so much. I just want you to know, like, you really enhanced my life, you know? And 2 days later, I got a contract for 3 more episodes that he was doing. So, you know, and then that built and that turned into 4 years. So it was just kind of a situation that where there was a lot of luck.
Yeah.
That's
amazing.
Fell in my lap. Yeah.
That's amazing. So with all that kind of, you know, your experiences of saying one line and turning into 4 seasons and kind of just navigating this crazy industry. What are your goals with acting specifically going forward?
With acting specifically, you know, I think anyone's goal is to be at the top of the list or at the top of the, you know, at the top of your field. So that's definitely the goal. But for me, what I've noticed, and this has taken time, is the more I put pressure on myself with acting, the worse I do. So if I can put myself in a mindset where I'm not necessarily like, I care, don't get this twisted. I care.
No, I hear you.
But where I can sort of pull myself away from the specific project a little bit and just go in and be like, you know what, if you want this performance, like, that's great. If you don't, that's also okay. And once I've been able to get my mindset there, it's definitely helped in terms of the actual skill of acting for me. So I've just, it's taken time to realize that, but I think that the long-term goal is obviously to probably land on a big show or be a part of a great franchise. And, you know, when something like that happens, I think people's lives really change. So that's what you work for in this business. Anytime you get to work, it's like you take it and it's exciting because it really is. It's like, it's really hard to book a job.
Yeah. I don't envy that journey. And, you know, talking to you, Charlie, Sam, just kind of hearing about what you guys have to go through, you know, pretty consistently to get work. It sounds brutal. So I appreciate what you guys were going through. But I wanted to ask, how did you start getting into producing? Was that kind of as a byproduct of, hey, you know what, it's kind of hard to just get jobs out here. Maybe I can create some jobs for myself and for my friends. Was that part of the thought process?
I think there's two sort of things that got me into producing. One, my dad is a producer, and you have been to my house many times. I know dad. I mean, he has worked his whole life on this one job and has found a lot of success in the job. And it's something I always wanted to do. I just never knew how to do it. Again, there's not a manual for producing. You learn by experience and through lessons and failures, and that's how it is. So, and he always says it's an old man's business. It's not a young person's business. You have to really do it for a long time and stay with it and stay in it because, you know, exactly whatever. But so I grew up in my dad's office, and I started as I got into my 20s, I started noticing some of the skills that I had learned from him over the years. And I thought, you know, maybe I can apply these to producing.
Which ones in particular do you notice?
I noticed, you know, problem solving, which is a producer basically all day, every day.
Putting out fires.
I learned about being the glue person and packaging, and basically, you know, it's my job to go find the director and the writer and the talent and put together the best possible package to enhance my chances at selling this product, right? And then, you know, I've been on these sets, I've seen how he operates, I've seen, you know, the level of composure that you need to have. You know, you're ensuring that these things are running smoothly, and these things, which are productions, do not run very smoothly.
Yeah.
So it's your job to make sure that they do. And, you know, you have to be able to communicate with people. That's the most important thing, right? Like, you have to be able to communicate with people, because the whole job is literally communicating.
I feel like it's a lot of relationship building and effective communication. You know, you have to, from my just knowledge and understanding of just kind of what I, you know, what I studied in college and what I've seen, you have to be able to, like you said, package. And that comes from relationships and people trusting people and having good work experiences. And then that relies on effective communication, because if you have bad communication and rub people the wrong way, they're not going to return your phone calls.
100%. I've seen my dad's phone line go cold, and I've seen my dad's phone line get really hot, and that's just what happens. And that's a huge lesson, because it's not always like that. It's this, right? That's just what it is. It doesn't really matter who you are. It's always like that. So that's what I learned from my dad. And then, you know, I started realizing, I'm like, from acting, I've grown up with a lot of very respected people in my field, and I've created those relationships. I'm like, well, if I can use these skills that I've learned from my dad while also using the relationships that I have and putting friends and people that I care about in positions where, you know, I can enhance their careers with something great, it's like, that feels like a win-win to me. Maybe I can do something here, you know? And then I tried doing that for 2 or 3 years. And after the last ship, my producing career felt like it was going nowhere, and my acting career felt like it was going nowhere because I couldn't book anything. And I had a quarter life crisis with where I said, I'm not going to be in this industry anymore. I can't do it. It's not for me. Yeah. Nothing's working. Literally the two things that I'm so passionate about.
Yeah.
I can't book a job for my life. I literally couldn't book anything, and nothing that I'm producing is going to go. And I want it to go, but nothing's happening. And I come home one day and I have a full breakdown, and you know, I don't cry a lot. Was crying. Yeah.
Oh my God. You're dad, like, I'm gonna go work at Target or something. Oh, I don't know. I gotta figure it out.
I don't know. I was gonna come work at Bristol at that point. I mean, no. I mean, it's like if Luke and Jake will take me, please just take me on.
You had a list. You had your Rolodex out. You're ready to start making calls.
Exactly. So I come home and I call my dad, and he's like, well, then you need to get a job. And I was like, okay. He's like, you need a job, because I'm telling you right now, if you're working, you will work. Whenever you are working, more work will come. And I said, okay.
Yeah.
That's the lesson that he said, you know, right there. And I was like, all right. I was reluctant. Listen, being an actor, you're not at a day job every day. It's a different sort of lifestyle, you know? So
yeah, totally.
It was a shift. And then I got a job as a walkie-talkie PA on an Adam McKay show called Showtime.
What is a walkie-talkie PA versus a regular PA? There
you go. So I get there, and I sort of, I wouldn't say, I didn't, I said that I had had some PA experience, when really my PA experience was not as high as it probably should have been. But I got, you know, I was in there, and I got there, and they said, you're the walkie PA. And I was like, I PA'd other stuff, but I don't know how to walkie PA. And they're like, well, figure it out. And I was like, okay. And the other PAs, literally the other PAs, they are like, this is the worst job on set. I was like,
oh no.
Thank you guys so much for making me feel so good about this. So the job is, and this is for HBO. So there was, I think, 300 walkie-talkies, okay? And these walkie-talkies are expensive, Jake. Like, you don't want to lose these things, okay?
Yeah.
So they give me, I think it was 10 or 12 cases of, like, 75 walkie-talkies.
Oh, no.
And they said, you're responsible for these. You need to charge them. You need to hand them out to everyone. You need to label them. You need to keep the inventory of them. Here's the Wi-Fis you need to charge, you know, and here's the charging ports, the charging bucket, your walkie belt. So I would walk around with batteries and stuff like that and the whole thing. And you're in charge of the paperwork. At that point, I think I had a full-blown panic attack because I'm not equipped for this. But, you know, I went home. I went to work, I think I actually went home early that day because something happened. I got sick or something happened, and the nurse was like, you should go home. And I was like, I don't know if this is the panic.
You're like, perfect. I will go home. I was like, this is perfect. Yes.
Then I thought, really, I shouldn't work in this business. But I called my dad again, and he said, you need to get through this. It's going to be a great experience for you. And I was like, okay, go back the next day, start getting the hang of these things. Go home the next night. I get an audition in my inbox. Still, I'm a little disappointed, just the whole situation. I'm like down on my luck at this point is what it feels like. And it was 11 o'clock at night. I had to be back at work at 5 a.m. And my roommate, Graham, was like, let's just go upstairs and tape this thing. I'm like, dude, I don't care. I have a job. I'm not doing it. He's like, can we
just Milwaukee PA guy. Yeah. Milwaukee talkie PA guy. I'm busy.
Yeah, exactly. Can we please just tape this? Fine. Let's go upstairs. Taped it, sent it in, didn't think anything of it. 2 days later, I get a call from my manager, and she's like, hey, you're in the top three for this role. And I was like, okay, sure. Great. Sounds good. It was the lead of a movie. And I'm like, yeah. All right, cool. Let me know. She's like, what are you doing? I'm working a job. I started 3 days ago. We're in prep week. The job really starts in 5 days from now. So, you know, and she was like, can you quit if you book it? And I was like, I guess I could quit. Sure.
Yeah.
I go back. I'm really getting the hang of the walkie-talkies at this point. I mean, I've labeled all of them. I know exactly where they are, you know, to the point where I'm locked in, right? I'm like mentally.
Yeah. It's game time.
They give me Friday off. Okay. I was supposed to work all week. They give me Friday off. They're like, you've done all the work you need to do for prep. Like you there's nothing else for you to do. I'm like, oh, wow. Good. What, pat on the shoulder.
Yeah.
Pat.
Yeah.
You know, like you're the king of the walkies now. And on that Friday, I get a call and she says, you booked it from my whole team. They're like, you need to quit your job right now. I'm like, I've worked for 4 days. This is insane. So I call them, I quit. The next Monday I'm at a table read as, you know, the male lead of this Blumhouse movie. And it was just a moment that I will always hold on to because it was that moment of, you know, the universe has weird ways of working. And my dad was right in the sense of if you work and you do good work and you work hard, sometimes you get rewarded with things. And that's, you know, how it felt there. And the full circle to the story is on our last night of shooting, we had a scene where we were driving in the car and it was far away. And the director comes up and says, hey, we have to put a walkie talkie in the car.
Do you know how to use it?
And he was like, guys, this is going to take so long. We have to teach one how to use it. And I go, no, you don't. I got it. I got it.
And I love that.
Dude, I was like, I have chills thinking about it right now. And I started pulling out all the walkie tricks. I was talking to them on different channels and doing the whole thing. And
that's
it was
crazy.
Awesome. It was awesome. So it really came full circle in that moment. And then ever since then, that movie, things have been going great.
What did that movie come out already? Or is it coming out soon?
It came out last May, March.
Okay.
Last March.
So like right when everything shut down.
Literally, it was a COVID. It was like one of the first COVID movies.
So was that tough for you? Because I'm sure you were super excited for the whole thing, and like it, then everything happened. You probably did. You have a premiere to go to, or was everything kind of pulled? What was that like for your first big movie release?
The premiere was on March 4th.
Okay.
The world shut down on March
like 12th.
So we were right on the border, but we made it.
Crazy.
Isn't that wild?
Crazy. Really, really, just hard to imagine.
Just going back to the beginning of this conversation.
Yeah.
About confidence and, you know,
yeah,
that movie gave me the confidence that I can be an actor, because that's what I had always wanted. I had always wanted to book the lead of a movie, and to be able to do that, that is like one of those moments I can look back on and be like, damn, I was put into a high pressure situation with, you know, weight on my shoulders of a production, and I was able to get through it. That's something going forward I can reflect on. And, you know, it was a moment like I achieved a goal.
Yeah. I mean, just hearing that story is amazing. I think what you said, you know, your dad put you on that path, like just work and you'll be rewarded, you know, something will come out of it. And I think the fact that you became a walkie-talkie PA, something so specific, and it put you through all that to then be on that set. And it comes down to, oh shit, someone needs to know how to use this walkie-talkie. You got to teach them. It's like, to me, that's just a sign of, you know, you did the right thing. You're on the right path. You just got to keep doing it, keep grinding, keep working through those ups and downs. And, you know, eventually you'll get where you want to go. But for you, are there types of content, you know, types of movies or TV shows that you gravitate towards, you know, either acting in or developing from a production standpoint that gets you excited about the future?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the kind of person where I don't want to be on a project in any capacity if I can't really enhance it or add value in any way. And where I've landed is young adult, right? YA is somewhere I can be useful, and horror, somewhere I can be useful. So those are the two places that I've really stationed myself with my projects. And that's just in terms of producing. In terms of acting, I mean, I was on the Goldbergs last night. I did not expect to,
I saw that.
I did not expect to ever be on a comedy, but it worked. You kind of, with acting, who knows what anything can be. So you kind of just go for everything. But in terms of producing, it's like, how can I build my producing brand, and where can I sort of station myself where I can be successful and provide the most success provide the most tools and assets to other people. And that's in horror and YA.
I mean, it sounds like you're on the right path with acting and producing. Is there anything else besides being a professional basketball player, you know, a dream you're still chasing? Is there anything else that you're interested in doing and creating, you know, from a business standpoint, maybe outside of that, just things that you've been quietly working on?
I've started consulting for a few companies, which has been something that I never thought I'd be doing, but it's been really rewarding. And I truly love business. I love the feel. I love the flow. I love being able to be helpful. And I love watching products and people grow. And, you know, that's a huge passion of mine. So there's a few things there. And then obviously, Jake, as you know, my best friend Greg and I have a YouTube channel.
Yes, I do.
Which we've built over the last 4 or 5 years together, which has made us inseparable at points. Which is who knows if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I think it's a good thing. So that's been really, really great for us, just in terms of creating content, proving that we can produce content. You know, it's when you're making an episode for a YouTube channel, there's a lot of work that goes into it. It's
essential. How often are those episodes coming out? Is it weekly?
We usually try and go weekly. It's hard.
It is hard,
as you know, just
editing, doing this show,
editing a podcast, right? It's really, we're kind of perfection.
You were actually one of the first people I spoke to when I think I called you right when I was about to start doing this, to pick your brain and get some advice, because there's not really a blueprint. You know, there are a lot of people doing this, but there's a lot of different variations on how you should do it, or if you should go with a net, like an ad network, or if you should go exclusively or go to all, like, it's just so overwhelming that, you know, you just, it's hard to know what to do. And sometimes that can be paralyzing. I remember I gave you a call because I saw, you know, you've been doing you're doing a podcast. You have the YouTube channel. So I'm sure, you know, the difficulty of just like everything that goes into just getting one episode up, you know,
100%. And, you know, for me, it's like, I've tried to diversify myself enough where I don't have all my eggs in one basket. I work hard at a lot of things, and a lot of things take a lot of time, but I want to give myself the best chance to succeed, because I'm not the kind of person that can necessarily stick to one thing. Yeah. I mean, listen, the podcast is going well for you. I had no idea you were actually really going to do it. So I'm very proud of it. And,
you know, yeah.
It was a, look, I mean, we had a podcast, you know, and it's just one of those things that we tried. And for us, the hardest part was doing this over Zoom. It's like the connection with people is kind of makes the, you know, for us, that's what we really wanted. And it just didn't work the way we wanted it to work. But, you know, you guys are crushing it. So I'm proud.
Appreciate it. It goes both ways. Well, that's everything I have for you for today. I don't know if there's anything else you want to get off on this episode. You know, feel free to do so.
I just want more Bristol clothing. Anything I can do, I would, you know.
Yeah, no, we'll keep that in mind.
This is from before you started working.
No, totally.
So
OG Bristol.
That's the last time I was really in the mix, so.
We'll keep you in mind. We'll keep you posted going forward and make sure we get you some new Bristol.
I definitely.
Oh, I heard you stole. Sorry, we had Sam on the podcast earlier. He said that you stole his triple hem shorts.
They're in my drawer right now. They're the top. They're the top short that I wear. So, you know.
Love to hear that.
He's not getting those back.
No, he knew that too. He knew that too. But again, thanks for coming on today, man. Really appreciate it.
Dude, thank you so much for having me. I am very proud of you, very proud of all you guys, and I'm a huge fan. So
likewise,
have me back, please.
Definitely looking forward to it. All right, man, take care.
This podcast is presented by Bristol Studio. Sound editing by Rashad Allen. Music by James Grissom.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.